Welcome back, everyone, and we're glad you're joining us here for a Basic Conversation. I'm joined once again with Father Jim Basic, and we're going to be talking about Bridging the Globalist and Nationalist Divide. It's a lecture he gave recently, and a great deal of content to get into. And Father Basic, once again, I really enjoy the format that you used for this lecture, and you basically picked two individuals, and then you provide also a theologian's view. And the two individuals, Thomas Friedman, New York Times writer and author of several books and considered a globalist, and then Steve Bannon, a media executive and political strategist, and he would be viewed as a nationalist.
No, my guess is more people know Steve Bannon these days
than Thomas Friedman,
with all of his trouble and so on. Yeah, I use those as representative figures. So Thomas Friedman representing globalization. Yeah. Friedman sort of sees globalization as an inevitable fact of life, that the world has shrunk, that we can communicate across the globe, that economics are intertwined, that culture exchanges are common. That it's just a, for him, Friedman, it's just a fact.
Right.
It's happening. It's here. The world is globalized. We live in the global village. And you can contact somebody across the world. You can fly to see Singapore. Mm-hmm. You know, and the internet brings us together.
There's an interconnectedness that there's no going back from that.
Yeah.
You know what I found, that, and there was three areas that you really talked about, these two kind of contrasting views of the world, and that was, and the three areas are economics, politics, and culture.
Yeah.
And it served as, those are big main societal drivers, right?
Right, exactly, yeah.
But the point is that those factors, how we look at those factors, is shaped by how we view the world.
Exactly. And of course, as always, I want to say, well, what's the Christian perspective
yes.
on this? And especially out of my own Catholic tradition, what does Catholic social teaching tell us about globalization and nationalism?
Right.
So I said a few words about Friedman representing the globalization. I'm picking up, I mean, his thought is more nuanced, but in general, it's a given.
Yeah.
You know, and as a moral theologian, I want to say, well, wait a second. I mean, there's more to be said. Is it good or bad? Are there ways to direct it? Are there virtues that could help us be better globalists? What's Pope Francis say about this? What does Catholics say? So that's what I want to do. On the other hand, you got Steve Bannon, who is such a polarizing figure, so I used him anyway. And he is actually a good example of a nationalist. He calls himself an economic nationalist, mm-hmm. And has really made it his life crusade to build up nationalism. So that's the whole Trump thing of America first. You know, we got to look out for ourselves, make America great again. Steve Bannon takes credit for helping Trump to win the 2016 election and said if Trump had followed him more closely, he would have won in 2020. So Bannon is not loath to present his own credentials or toot his own horn or to bring out what he did. So, but what he's saying is put the country first. No, forget the rest of it and so on. But it didn't limit himself to the United States. He saw it as a worldwide crusade. Mm. He wanted to foster nationalism all over the world. He wanted to get prominent Catholics involved with him. He got involved with in Rome. There was a convent or a monastery that they rented, and he was working with Cardinal Burke and other Catholic figures on promoting nationalism around the world. And so he liked what was going on in Turkey, you know, where he liked the strong authoritarian sense of it. So the country first, my country during the Vietnam War, we'd say, my country, right or wrong. That was one of the slogans, right? My country, right or wrong. Right. I'm a citizen, and therefore whatever the United States is doing in Vietnam is fine, you know, and I'm going to support it. And of course, Catholic socialist teaching said, you can't just say my country, right or wrong. Out of a Christian perspective, you got to say, is my country on the right track or not? Right. Is my country, are we morally correct? Did invading Iraq, did it make sense or not? No. Did it, was it right to get out of Afghanistan or not?
Mm-hmm. The economics, let's start there. Friedman would say that just from a pure business standpoint, the multinational corporations is just a one indication that we're tied in as a global village. And he talked about the, or you brought up this idea of the Dell theory of conflict. Yeah. Dell computers, Dell corporations.
I think that comes from Friedman.
Friedman,
who said that the more that multinationals are involved in various countries, they don't want war. They don't
bad
want
for business,
conflict.
Besides
bad
killing
for business,
people and immoral.
The Dell factor. Yeah. If you're selling Dell computers all over the world, you don't, a war is going to get in your way. You know, conflicts are bad for business. So, and that's true. I mean, our multinationals, I mean, they're all over the world. I remember being in Moscow. One of the things that struck me was there was a gigantic McDonald's on Pushkin Square, the biggest McDonald's I ever saw. So McDonald's is all over the world. You know, Coca-Cola's all over the world. And the economies are interconnected. And anyway, yeah, multinationals could be a force for peace. I don't know if that's always true. Is there a counter argument on that? I really don't know.
Right.
But it does make a certain sense, doesn't it?
It does.
If you're running a major, if you're running Apple, you want to be able to sell Apple computers in China, and you don't want them invading Taiwan because it's going to mess up business. I think that's true.
Yeah. Now, Bannon, the counterpoint in the economics, he kind of positioned himself as a champion of the working person, and he viewed NAFTA as being terrible for American workers.
Yeah. A lot of that came from his own sense of his father. His father worked for, I think it was AT&T for years, and was a faithful employee and so on. And then when the recession hit, his father ended up selling his AT&T stock and at a lower price and cost him a lot of money. And so that his working man, working class man, hard worker, Bannon felt that his dad got a raw deal and that we had to look out for working people and so on. So I know that's what drove him or helped him to move in that direction.
And he also would, at this merging that thought with his political point of view, that anger and resentment from the working class fuels the politics too.
The more you can make, anger is the great mover politically for Bannon. You want to play to people's fears, to their anger, to the sense of being displaced economically, culturally, and so on. And so that Trump was the man he saw that could play to that through his language. Trump had an instinct for what people were feeling, the things that stolen from them culturally, economically, and so on. And Bannon really encouraged that.
And then you, the third aspect of the way you frame this conversation, you brought the theologian Catholic social teaching part, which you've mentioned already, but you also talked about Rerum Novarum, 1891, where the Pope Leo,
Leo the 13th,
he embraced, at first wanted to say bad things about unions, but was convinced, no, unions are good.
Yeah, a key event in the history of Catholic social teaching in the United States, Catholic immigrants were dealing with the nativist prejudice. They were looked as outcasts. They were people who had too many children and gambled and were dirty and so on. And so they had trouble trying to make it in this culture. And one of the ways that they were able to move forward was through labor unions. And there were Catholic leaders of the early labor unions and so on. And then, but Pope Leo XIII was going to condemn labor unions. And Cardinal Gibbons from the United States went to Rome and talked to Leo XIII and said, effectively, if you do that, you will lose the Catholic immigrants in the United States for decades, maybe for centuries. And he was right, of course. And so he effectively talked Leo XIII into, in the encyclical Rerum Novarum, 1891, the first great encyclical in Catholic social teaching, goes back that far, where instead of condemning the labor unions, Leo XIII came out in support of them. And of course, that in the United States is what gave priests, when I was first ordained in 1962, it was amazing to me how much respect there was in the Catholic world for priests. But it was earned respect because the priests were the ones who helped the Catholic immigrants get jobs, showed them how to fill out forms, wrote letters for them, supported the labor unions, you know, helped them to move, get built schools, and had high schools, grade schools, and so on. All helped the immigrants so that they were happy with the priests, and they revered the priests. The priests provided them with the sacraments, the Eucharist and baptism and so on, but the priests also helped them move forward economically. Right. And so we, the priests today then rested on the shoulders of those great priests who were social activists and so on. So that was a positive sense of Catholic social teaching. Now today, if you get up and preach that Catholic social teaching says we need a better distribution of wealth,
that wouldn't go over well.
No, it's not going to go over because those Catholics in the pews now have made it. They're the most affluent people around. And some of them are thinking, I pulled myself up, let them pull themselves up. Mm-hmm. We did it, they should do it. We don't need redistribution of wealth. We need them to have virtue like we had virtue. And so that's the problem that Catholic priests today or bishops face in trying to propound Catholic social teaching. But Catholic social has something to say, like the freedmen want to say, look, you're all this globalization thing. Yeah, but is it just or not? Yeah. Catholic Social says, is it working or not? Are we getting a bigger gap between rich countries like the United States and poor countries? No, we have to ask the question of that. Is it help? Or is it wiping out minorities? Is it increasing the gap between the wealthy and the poor? And in many cases, you have to say globalization is not doing well. You know, Pope Francis is big on that. He says, if globalization, you know, destroys local cultures, that's a bad thing. Yeah. Pope Francis runs around the world talking about indigenous people. He was just in Canada trying to apologize to indigenous people to what the government and what the church had done, apologize for what the church had done in not respecting indigenous culture. So he says globalization is that danger. And so it's not just. So we have to, I want to tell Thomas Friedman, it's not just a fact. It's, is it working or not? Some ways it's good. Maybe it does help peace. But it's also at times hurting indigenous people or poor people or underdeveloped countries.
And you challenge the nationalist view by saying there's some issues that you can't really solve as nations, like
exactly climate change. How's that?
Human trafficking.
Yeah,
and then even looking at COVID or
infectious disease. Yeah, I mean, the COVID thing is showing how the globalized world, viruses travel all over, right? Starts in China, it's all over the world. Everybody can't avoid it. People are still getting it today. Yeah, Bannon is so short-sighted. I mean, I'm critical of him. I mean, I'm not, I tried to be the honest interpreter or moderator, but I didn't do a very good job of it in the lecture because it came out that I just totally disagreed with Steve Bannon. And what irked me a lot is that he got the church people on his side.
And I didn't know he was Catholic.
Yeah. I grew up in a Catholic family and had a sense of the power of the church for his own purposes. And he gets Cardinal Raymond Burke, prominent Catholic thing, to be on the board with him of this group in Italy that's trying to promote things that are going on in Hungary and nationalist movements all over the world. He always says that he's not prejudiced, but it comes out that way. It's just, no, I want to say, that I guess the virtue I want to insist with our friend Steve Bannon is solidarity. The Catholic virtue called solidarity. Solidarity means you are inclined to see that we're on one spaceship Earth. You're inclined to see that all human beings are related. You're inclined to see that we are all members of God's family. As Christians say, Jesus Christ died for all people, for all people. And so the church's job is to try to bring that unity to fruition. So Steve has no sense of universal solidarity.
And isn't that trying to counter kind of the natural human instinct of self-interest?
Sure.
Right? That's
of course, yeah. Yes. Very, very important point. Well put. And just to amplify that, you know, we all have the tendency to look out for number one.
Right.
And not only that, Brad, but we've got a whole sense of individualism in our country that fosters that. We had a whole decade, we call it the me decade, right? We had books by Wayne Dyer, pull your own strings, do your own thing, look out for number one. A whole culture that way that says your personal faith is more important than belonging to a religion. Or in my marriage, I expect my wife to help promote me, and I'm not so big on her going back to school. You know, so, yeah.
Let's go to the political driver. And United Nations is flashpoint, or it kind of captures both, is the importance of having a global organization where the nationalist Bannon type would say it's a disaster.
Absolute disaster, yeah. As Bannon says at any political rally, if you want to get a loud applause, say, we're against the United Nations. United Nations is not going to tell the United States what to do. United Nations is a corrupt organization. It's run by third world countries and so on. Yeah, that's an applause line for sure.
Then you have the Paris Agreement. You also have the Iran nuclear deal. Also, global issues.
Let's go back and stay with the United Nations. The Catholic Church has been a big promoter of the United Nations. You know, it likes to point out good things they've done. The United Nations have helped eradicate smallpox, kept us out of war in the Suez Canal crisis, you know. It does humanitarian things in the world. So, yeah. In fact, Pope Benedict went even further. Like, we have a Security Council that tries to avoid war, you know. So he said we should have, like, an economic Security Council that would help us deal with inflation, help us deal with recessions, help us get greater equity between the developed and the undeveloped nation. You know, remember Pope Paul VI went to the United Nations and his great speech said, no more war, no more war. War is not a way to solve problems. And so, yeah, the popes have been big and, well, so have our Catholic bishops and enlightened church people. United Nations it's not perfect, obviously, and a lot of things it can't get done. But how about the Paris Agreement? That is so important, you know. You know, these days when we got wildfires all over the place and people are now predicting that within 3 decades or something we'll have temperatures of 125 degrees in big parts of the world and in the United States. I mean, how important that was. And one of the worst things that Donald Trump did was try to get us out of the Paris Agreement. It really never happened because he didn't have time to make it happen. And if he had had a second term, he would have made it happen. But we're still in the that's 100 countries saying we got to work together and we got to do more. Well, Congress just passed a bill with a lot of money to promote climate, to deal with global warming in the United States. So it's a perfect example. Steve Bannon, you know, was all, get out of Paris Agreement. It's a terrible thing. China is benefiting in some way or something. And yet you had, thank goodness we're in it again, and we're making progress. I mean, your kids, your grandchildren, Brad, what are they going to do in 125-degree temperature? I mean, why can't we make that clearer? I mean, why can't we get more people in the United States to recognize? You know that Rush Limbaugh, I was a big listener for Rush Limbaugh, he thought that the global warming was a total hoax and one of the worst things that was ever happened, and he had to fight global warming and that whole ideology tooth and nail. That was, Rush Limbaugh was just totally against that and thought it was untrue and a hoax. And of course, Pope Francis came out and said, I accept the fact that humans are contributing to global warming. He had a big think tank, wonderful experts and so on that advised him, but he came out and said, you know, we it's a real problem, and burning fossil fuels is a cause of it, and that we got to do better.
During the theological or Catholic social teaching part of this political part of your lecture, you said a term I never heard before, and it was the principle of subsidiary.
Yeah, subsidiarity.
Say that again?
Yeah, subsidiarity.
And it was decisions should
be
made.
It actually came from Pope Pius the 11th. And fundamentally it says that dealing with human problems, policies and so on, you should do it at the local level if you can. And if it doesn't, the government, city government can't solve it, and your school board can't solve it, that then you need intervention at the state level. And if that doesn't work, you need intervention at the federal level. So I know a lot of politicians have drawn on that for their own benefit and so on, but I mean, I think it makes a certain sense. I mean, you're going to improve the school system, right. School boards probably, where parents are there and they know what's going on and so on.
To contrast that, then you brought up the Marshall Plan,
yeah,
as a wonderful example of the common good.
Yeah, yes, great phrase, Brad. Thank goodness you got you're great. Common good, yeah. That's what Catholic social teaching, you got to serve the common good. So after we win World War II, what do? We help Europe and we help Japan to rebuild. That was a great thing to do. It's a great, wonderful example because it helped us. We had a trading partner then, right? We had a whole European trading partners thing going because of the Marshall Plan. We could have economic relations with Japan and so on. So the Marshall Plan was a good thing to do, it was a charitable thing to do, but there was also self-interest in it.
And the third cultural, or the third driver of the conversation was culture. And Friedman alluded to, which you brought up already, that American brands are everywhere. Yeah. And movie stars and TV shows.
The world knows about Michael Jackson.
All of that, yes.
Beyonce,
right. But then Bannon, he had a whole nother view of culture.
Yeah, I mean, is so restricted.
And not a fan of Pope Francis.
No, explicitly. Yeah. He likes the culture warrior Catholics who want to fight. He likes that. Yeah. Likes Cardinal Burke. You know, he says we got to fight. I lost my train of thought. What would take me back? What were we doing? Bannon.
Just that he had a different view of culture. And,
yeah. I think that...
Not as permissive, let's say, as maybe Friedman.
Yeah, I think he saw value in what he thought of as the traditional culture.
Traditional culture, yes.
And traditional Catholicism. He saw that as standing up for values and so on. That what we have is too much relativism.
Yeah. No, not enough absolutes. And
right, exactly. Yeah. And of course, there's a point in that,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
There's a point in that.
Everything's good, everything's okay. It doesn't feel right.
If there's no standards.
No standards.
One thing's not ugly or beautiful or good or bad. It's all one thing, relativism. Yeah, he has a strong sense of that, but his cultural thing is, it has, I got to be careful here, but it has tinges of what we would call white nationalism, you know, that, and that's what he played to. He said he didn't, but he played to that. White people are being displaced. That's why the whole thing he kept telling Trump, emphasize this immigration problem. You know, that's, these people are coming in. They're taking our place. It's called replacement theory. Mm-hmm. Tucker Carlson on Fox News plays to that all the time. That's a Bannon theme. You know, white people are being replaced. Remember Charlottesville and those things? What are they yelling? Jews will not replace us. Jews will not replace us. You know, and of course, playing to that had all kind of racist overtones and so on. I just think Steve Bannon's line on culture is dangerous, and it's anti-Catholic. It's against the religion he grew up with and in many ways wants to mobilize for his own purposes. I think it's off base.
Yeah. You also talked about we don't have to necessarily, we can feel good about ourselves as Americans, but we don't have to say we're the best.
Yeah.
That there's other
it's
cultures.
Tricky, isn't it?
It is
tricky.
We got to feel good.
Yeah.
But there's other good.
Obama got into all kind of trouble like by saying, well, French think they're exceptional too. Germans think they're exceptional. One of the interesting things about that is that our exceptionalism is aspirational. In other words, we're finding not on geography or blood and soil. No, we're founded on an idea. Declaration is dependent. All men are created equal, endowed by the Creator with certain inalienable rights. And so our exceptionalism is in our idealism, in our aspiration. Lincoln was so good at that. You know, we got to follow our better angels, he says, right? We got to work to form a more perfect union. And so in terms of nationalism, we say, that's great stuff. John Courtney Murray wrote a book, We Hold These Truths. The truths that we hold, Jesuit theologian, we hold these truths that all men are created equal. That's a nice start. You know, and throughout our whole history, trying to get that straight, if all men are created equal, we ought not have slaves. Mm-hmm. You know, if all men are created, all human beings are created equal, then women ought to have the right to vote. If all people are created equal, then blacks should not be discriminated against in voting. The Jim Crow laws were a bad thing. It's wonderful stuff. It can move us forward.
And you really tied things up at the end by creating the bridge, and it was a challenge. You basically said that globalism and nationalism is goods and bads to both, and that we need to be look at both of those frameworks critically and how it's implemented.
Right. So to look at globalization, what's good, promotes a lot of people have been raised out of poverty. billion people raised out of poverty, and economic globalization has a lot to do with that. So there's good things. There's also the danger you're going to hurt marginalized people, or the developing countries will not share in the wealth. You know, in terms of our country, there's a certain proper nationalism. The virtue of patriotism, I think I wanted to tell Friedman that virtue of patriotism is important. Love of country is a good thing. Mm-hmm. But love of country says that we cherish and celebrate our values, our good things, our progress on race, on sexism, and so on. A lot of progress. But we also see there's stuff going on, like excessive individualism, that's hurting us. So it's always that the church and Catholic teaching, moral theology, should be in dialogue with the world. And it should come at it out of a higher perspective. My line repeated often, the cross is judge of the flag. And Christian, we pledge allegiance first to Jesus, then to the country. But out of that perspective, it gives us a frame for saying what's good and what's bad. And how could we enhance the good, and how do we overcome the bad? Do that for globalization and for nationalism.
And you left us at the end with two metaphors for us to think about, and that was really the choice. If you look at both stark terms, nationalism is talking about building walls, where the globalist view is really talking about living within the eye of the hurricane.
Oh, yeah. That's Pope Francis, I think. Pope Francis living with the eye of the hurricane. Chaos all around us, but we're supposed to remain a certain equilibrium, a certain consciousness of God's presence in the world, that God is in favor of liberation, of people growing, of people being respected, and so on. So in the middle of all that hurricane, you know, at the center of the storm is a faith perspective that says we trust God. Let's not give up on our country. No, let's not say that we can't make progress. Let's not say that Bannon is going to rule the world. Thank goodness Cardinal Burke broke with Bannon. I should give Cardinal Burke Bannon got too extreme for him. Mm. And they were together in Rome, and this process in this program, and Cardinal Burke said he's too political, he's too radical, and he disassociated. So let's give him credit for that.
Yeah. Well, thanks again, Father Basic, for giving us some really deep reflections on a very complex topic.
Very complex. No simple solutions. Catholic social teaching can't solve all the world problems immediately, but Brad, we can tear down some walls, and we can build some bridges.
Yeah. Thanks, JB.